The film crickets are intended for mature audiences. Any guests on the film crickets do not necessarily share the same opinions as the film crickets.
Film crickets, chirping about movies.
It's time for the Film Crickets with Jay Fortier, Chris Martineau, and Melanie Howerton. On this week's episode, the Film Crickets review the 1993 American psychological thriller film, Falling Down.
In America, we have the freedom of speech, the right to disagree.
Does it stand the test of time? Let's find out. Your Film Crickets are on now.
Well, hey, friends. Welcome, everybody. My name is Jay Fortier. We are the Film Crickets. I'm along with my good friend, Chris Martineau.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm all right. I don't have a missile launcher, so that's good.
Yeah, it's a good start.
Yeah.
I guess it depends what angle you look at.
Valid, yeah.
Maybe it'd be great if you had a missile launcher.
Yeah.
And along with my good friend and co-host, Melanie Howerton. How you doing, Melanie?
Good. How you doing, guys?
Super.
Doing well?
Super. Are we falling
I'm
down?
I'm doing better than Michael Douglas's character.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, God.
Who gets listed as defense in the...
I press. Love it.
That was weird.
I love they listed
his
him
name
as
was
defense.
Bill.
Yeah, Bill Foster. He had a friggin' name. I don't know what the problem is. So we watched... when did this come out?
93.
We watched Falling Down per the recommendation of Miss Melanie here. I want to thank her for that. Why? Why did you? Why you said, "Hey, let's do Falling Down." Like, what's your deal with Falling Down? Let's go through history here. Like, why? Well, when did you see Falling Down? How many times have you seen it? Like, what's your deal?
Well, let me just start off with the reason why I thought of it, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately, is because there's so much freaking construction around here. And I was with my daughter. We were going somewhere, and there was so much construction, and I'm like, oh my God, you got to see this movie. And the part that just sticks out in my head more than anything besides the whammy burger thing, which is my favorite, is when he, you know, gets stuck in traffic and just leave his car. But later on when he's going to the people and he's like, just admit it. You're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah.
So I think about that every single time that I'm stuck in construction forever going, I wonder what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's fair to say they're actually doing something.
Yeah, but look, what's taking so long? There's like right in front of my work, like literally at the entrance of my work, you know, it basically, there's a rotary that they've been building for months. It's already carved out. Pour the freaking cement. What the hell is taking so long? It's like, I just don't understand. It's like, I just really don't understand.
Right around the time I was graduating high school, there was a news special like throughout the week. You know how they'll strip a special throughout the week, like on the 5 o'clock news, you know, like all this week, we're going to be doing this segment called Money for Nothing. And they were showing construction people like on the road, just standing around like, like, and they actually used like a cover version of Dire Straits. Like, you hear a guy go, money for nothing.
Oh boy.
Right? No, but like while showing them Dukes, like one guy just standing there, there was a bunch of, I remember my mom was telling me, she was like, yeah, there's a bunch of them standing around. And then one guy takes a jackhammer and starts doing the jackhammer and the cloud of dust. And they're like, stop it.
Yeah.
Telling him to stop. So it's
too
funny.
Much work going on here.
We're all resting here.
It's but. Like, you know, and they're there every single day doing something, but I don't see anything changing. And I'm like, okay, I don't know. It just reminds me of it all the time. So I don't remember when I saw this. It probably was on like HBO or something a long time ago. I have no idea. I don't think that I ever owned it, but I've seen it a few times. And it's just always stuck in my mind. And I've been wanting to do it for a while. And especially just got, like I said, just reminded of it with the construction all over the place.
So you don't own it now?
No.
Well, you had to rent it.
I had to rent it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
$2-3. It's a dollar less than usual.
It could have been worse.
Yeah. All right, Jay, what's your deal? Did you rent this? Would you go see it?
In the past, I rented it. All right. And like I thought I didn't see the whole thing, but apparently I did.
Okay.
And it's not that it wasn't good or anything. It's just that, you know, there's a lot that, you know, you remember over the years of, like, having a bigger impact. And it's not that it was even bad by, you know, I feel, like, weird saying I forgot about it. But, it was good. And I watched it for the first time. So this is the last night I watched it the first time again, meaning, like, you know, like the second time, really, you know.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen it in so long. So it was like watching it for the first time. Sure. I had little bits and pieces in my head. And I didn't think I finished it, but apparently I remember the ending. So I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I did finish this whole movie.
Cool.
Yeah.
I rented it once, and I think it was just a matter of, it was Friday night and there was nothing else to do, and went to the video store and, hey, how about Michael Douglas? And I'm like, okay. I didn't really know much about it. And again, I remember liking it. And the only thing that sticks out to me are the scenes where Michael Douglas loses his friggin' mind.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of the other stuff, the other context of the movie.
Yeah.
Maybe I was too young to really understand it or appreciate it. Or like the Duvall character, I didn't understand the depth of the Duvall character. I was basically just focused on Michael Douglas losing his mind and saying things that we're all thinking, right? Yeah. That's kind of the thing. Like but my relationship with Michael Douglas this time and my relationship with Robert Duvall was very strange. And it got us to think about what I asked myself a lot. And I saw this with my wife, and we just talked about it last night. We talked about it today. Like, what is Joel Schumacher trying to get us to think with this movie? And to me, the message could be lost on someone that isn't willing to listen to Joel's message. Mm-hmm. But I'm still trying to figure out what the message is. Again, I want to remind people, this is Joel Schumacher. This is Batman and Robin. This is Batman Forever. Like, Joel Schumacher put nipples on the bat suit. But we're doing this movie. And he also did Flatliners, and he did a bunch of other stuff, right? So it just seems strange to put these two together, because this movie has some serious themes about masculinity, about capitalism, about democracy, about America, about family values, about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And it does not, it has Venice. However, it does not have a shirtless saxophone player.
That's true, which is unfortunate. I mean, I didn't see anything.
I swear that's when I woke up at the drive-in when I watched it. I was like, oh, what's that?
Yeah, what's
that? I don't know. I was super young, too. I don't know how old I was. And I was like, wow.
Oh, yeah. All right. So so Falling Down. This came out in 1993. Is rated R. It came in an hour and 53 minutes. Directed by Joel Schumacher. Written by Ebby Rose Smith. Starring Michael Douglas, as it says in IMDb, credited as D. Fenz. The man has a name. Bill Foster. Robert Duvall, Barbara Hershey, Rachel, I can't say her last name, but Sandra, the detective, Tuesday Weld, and Lois Smith from Twister is in this.
Hey,
and
then, did you see One Night?
Did you see One Night?
Yeah, no, that's not, yeah. Don't look for her name there. Okay. That's her name in The Abyss.
Oh,
she's one of the cops.
That's who that was. I saw her somewhere.
Like, in The Abyss, she's like, hey, One Night, it's Lindsay. Oh, hi, Lindsay. Joking.
Yeah. Okay. So look, here's the thing. This movie from the beginning is trying to aggravate us, right? It's trying to make us as uncomfortable as possible.
Especially during that opening scene.
Mm-hmm. It is warm. There's bugs. Everyone is angry at everybody.
Yeah.
This is a picture of Los Angeles, the city of dreams, as the dankest, warmest, least pleasant place you could possibly be, which goes against what we know about, or what we like to think. We're not from LA. I'm sure people from LA would disagree. But we think of LA here in the East Coast as the city of angels, the city of dreams. But it's really kind of terrible. So how aggravated were you at the beginning of this movie when he's caught in that traffic jam?
I think everyone's been there, so I think everybody can relate.
Right.
And then, like, everything is just going wrong. He's stuck in traffic. He's super aggravated. He can't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And
the AC's not working.
It's hot. The AC's not working yet. And there's a fly in the car. And then he's watching everybody. Kids are aggravating him on the side. Just watching everyone, like, and he's, you know, he just loses it. Like, I don't know. I think everybody, and I did write something down in the, it's in the trivia that I wrote. Okay. So,
Joel Schumacher.
He said that he was inspired to make the film after being stuck in traffic one day, and he found himself becoming increasingly frustrated and wondered what it would be like if he just left his car and walked away.
Sure. I mean, everybody's thought it. Yeah. And that's the setup. Because think about that. Now, and again, this informs what we're supposed to think about Michael Douglas at first. Mm-hmm. You've been caught in traffic, and you, Melanie, Jay, and me, we have been caught in traffic, and we have been stuck behind a car with a child looking out the window at us.
Yeah.
That child is doing nothing wrong, and we are getting aggravated because they're looking at us.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Everybody, or like, there's a, but like, why is this kid freaking looking at me? Stop looking at me. I just want to get out of traffic. Like, the child's not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, like, you know, giving the finger, or they're just sitting there, like, doing what kids do, just looking.
But it's almost kind of like, even though you're not doing anything wrong, it's almost like when you're in the movie theater and that little cute kid just keeps kicking your seat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, crazy. Oh my God. But so right out of the gate, we get started with Michael Douglas does that thing that we all wanted to do. We get out of the car. Fuck this. We're going to be here forever. I'm walking. And you know that's going to inconvenience everybody. And it's a selfish choice.
Yeah.
But what we don't understand at that point is Michael Douglas's character. Right. That he is
he lost his job.
He is a deeply...
His wife, family, yeah.
A deeply flawed and kind of on the edge character. But we don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. So right out of the gate, he's making us side with Michael Douglas. Mm-hmm. We're like, mm-hmm. I don't blame you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't blame you. Right. And then every time he gets into a situation where he acts irrationally, part of you is saying, I don't blame you for being aggravated about that person not giving you change.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you said, it's like totally making you side with him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why that's kind of what I remembered from the movie the most. Mm-hmm. I didn't really remember as much that he could perhaps, and we'll talk about it later, have killed his family or... you know, that he was a little psychotic. I don't think I remember that part as much because I just remember, you know, everyone's going to get a little aggravated. He's basically when he's going through a bad area of town, they're like, I think you should pay a toll, you know, or like, oh, you know, you have a dollar with you and you need change, but the person won't give you change unless you buy something. And the soda's a dollar, which is outrageous because it's too expensive. And then he doesn't have any money for change. And he's looking at everything in there and how expensive and overrated it is and overpriced. And you're getting, you know, and you know, that's like ripping them off. And everybody he encounters is like, and he meets a Nazi person that's, you know, horrible. Like it makes you definitely 100% side with him. What else happened to him too? Because I was thinking about it.
So here's the thing. Like, but as we're progressing from, basically, we start in the highway and we make it through the crappy part of LA. He's trying to get back to his home because it's his daughter's birthday. But what we don't know right away is that there's a restraining order against him that he can't go see his family, and we don't know why he has a restraining order. And good on this movie that it doesn't let us know why they have the restraining order. We just know they're divorced. We don't know if he's hit the kids, if he's an alcoholic, what his deal is, but he's got a deal. Well, and we don't know what it is.
I did write this down, and I don't think she'd actually would have been able to get a restraining order, technically, because she literally admitted that he had never hit her and never hit the kids. She just said, but at some points, she thought that he could.
Right.
You are not going to get a restraining order from somebody just from saying, no, he's never done anything, but... I just had a feeling.
Right.
And you are never going to be able to hold that child, and where that person is never going to be allowed to see their child again unless you have some sort of proof. So I did write that down in my notes. That didn't make any sense.
It is a little bullshit, but also what we're looking at here is what, and I think one of the scenes of this movie is the breakdown of what the American ideals are, right? In that America may be, you know, it's a very complicated issue. Like, for instance, when... We find out he has a restraining order against him, and you're right, Melanie, there's no reason that they would have granted that, but maybe the judge was just feeling it that day. The cop kind of says that, but then when the cop says, did he hurt you, is he a drinker, is whatever, and he says no, she says no, he hasn't, and the cop's like, well then what's the problem?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But we don't know, and then we come to find out, oh no, what's the problem? Because then we hear the video later on where he's getting like aggravated that his baby's crying and that won't get on the rocking horse and he's losing his mind. And we realize he's really unhinged. And we're only getting snips of that. And we come to see why he's unhinged because we finally get to see his mother. We get to see his home life. We learn about his father on the side.
Oh,
at the beginning of the movie, we have that Michael Douglas is super patriotic. Okay? In that his ideal is America is... this place where you should be given the opportunity to do whatever. So at the beginning of this movie, when he's going from the bad part of LA to the good part of LA, we're definitely going, he seems to have a lot of problems. The people that give him issues are not, well, except for the people in Whammy Burger, are kind of like, well, either immigrants or colored people or whatever.
And but they were going to beat him up.
I understand that. I'm not saying that. Well, yeah. I get that. And
you're so happy that when I love the part when he fights them back. Mm-hmm. Whacks him with their own bat and has a guy who's sure. pulling down the stairs.
No, yeah, that's when we're still like being sort of maybe on his side. Maybe.
Yeah, you don't know what's wrong with him yet. Yeah.
But you know, we also you can't fully side with him fully when you say, you know.
No, you can't side with him at all now. But in the beginning,
no.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying at the beginning, we're still like on the, you know, feeling him out. So, but we can't fully side with him in the Korean guy's shop because, you know, him saying what they don't have the letter V in your language, you know, like you know, it's like, you know, like can't really side you there, you know, I mean, like I get the price thing. You're upset about that.
I mean, the real victim in this, want to do in there, like beat up the prices on stuff. How much is it?
The
now?
Real
like,
victim. You know what I mean? Like... The real victim in this was convenience stores or stores.
Sure.
You know? No, because in the Army Navy shop, the sunglasses all get knocked over.
That's true. Yeah.
Everybody's destroying shit.
Yeah.
You kind of think he is a vigilante in the beginning. You don't understand that he's really horrible.
But here's the thing.
He kind of is a vigilante because he's sticking up for, okay, I should be able to freely walk somewhere without getting beat up and my stuff stolen from me, and I should be able to, you know, buy something that's not triple priced, you know.
Or breakfast at five minutes after it ends.
But it's a convenience store. Of course it's triple priced. That's the point. And it's not, it's like the convenience store guy is just trying to, he knows what his overhead is and he has to... He can charge whatever he wants because he has to buy the material and then sell it to somebody else at a profit.
Yeah, everyone has the price.
So of course you're going to.
No, however though, you can't like do an even exchange for quarters for a dollar.
Oh no, I get it. and that's the murky area. So let's talk about him getting held up when he's just trying to change his shoe, and the gang guys come up and say a territory fee. And whatnot. I mean, a normal person would be like, here's my there's nothing in the briefcase.
I know. Yeah.
So he's being stubborn and saying, no, it's mine. Mm-hmm. This is mine. You can't have it. It's mine. Mm-hmm. Whereas most other people would go, there's nothing in the briefcase. Here, just take the briefcase.
Yeah.
Or here's my wallet. Just let me go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Most people would say that, but that's where Schumacher is trying to get us on his side by saying, well, of course, like part of you would say, just give him the briefcase and go. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in it. You've got nothing else. Or part of you goes, yeah, but that's my stuff. I bought that. That's my stuff. And also, again, he's having such a terrible day for reasons that we haven't figured out yet. But then later on, should he shoot the guy in the leg?
No.
Should he grab a bag of guns? Mm-hmm. Like, at what point he's now getting
they were trying to technically kill him. So
I understand that, but...
They killed everybody but.
I know.
It's like the worst drive-by.
Part. Oh, my God. It was so funny. They're so stupid. Like, she was like, stop. What are you doing this for? I'm like, stupid idiots. Like, they just have to do it. And then they get into such a bad car accident and pretty much almost kill themselves. I'm like, this is so stupid. They just have to do it. You know, like,
the girl that in the car, the girl that was in the car is from Lean On Me.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That's familiar.
But that's interesting because, again, we're not... As we're learning more about Michael Douglas, he's getting further and further crazier, right? And we're siding with it first, and like, I don't know that I would have shot the guy in the leg just because.
No.
And I like, I don't know. This is getting a little bit iffy. And then the whammy burger happens.
That was funny, though.
And again, we've all said, come on. I'm the customer. Customer's always right.
Yeah.
And they won't give him breakfast. And it's only been 3 minutes. And everybody gets that irritation. But then the Uzi comes out. And he says, I'm sorry, I'm not going to shoot anybody. How's your burger? And he tries to like make it that he's not crazy. But that's what he would have done to his daughter. We see that later on with his daughter. When his daughter is crying and doesn't want to get on the rocking horse. And he screams at her and says, hey, our rocking horse is cool. Don't you like your birthday party? After you said horrible things.
Yeah.
So we... He starts to realize, I think, that...
It's like he's bipolar.
He's absolutely bipolar.
Yeah.
And we agree with him less and less as he makes his way across L.A.
Yeah.
Until he gets to the Army-Navy store, where he meets the neo-Nazi, who says truly horrible things about everybody. And then he takes him into the basement of the Army-Navy store, where he thinks it's really cool that he has an empty can of gas... that they used in the gas chambers in Auschwitz. Right? Yeah, hold this. It's really fun. And he goes to get something else. This guy's obviously a maniac. Mm-hmm. And he realizes, and he says to him, you know, oh, we're the same. Mm-hmm. And then Michael Douglas realizes, like, but I'm not like you. But yeah. Is he?
Well,
even if you aren't a white supremacist
at that point, in a way, because you're thinking he hates this guy because of he doesn't like, you know, because of how, like, what do you call that? A white supremacist.
He's a white supremacist. Yeah.
So he doesn't like people like that, because it almost kind of seems at that point that he's trying to say that he's not prejudiced against
anybody. He doesn't realize he is, or like he's not think. You know what's funny though?
He's not. Wait a minute. He's not. Jay, hold your thought. He's not prejudiced, but he says you people a lot.
Oh, no, no, no. He is.
And them and you people.
Who doesn't think?
I'm telling you right now. Yeah. I am telling you right now.
Right now?
If you know you know people.
Yeah.
You know people mm-hmm. that are in your lives that you can't just stop having them be in your life
mm-hmm.
without a major controversy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. You'd really have to shut people off and say, fuck all of you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk to my wife only. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not that simple, okay?
Yeah.
You have people in your life that are prejudiced. And then you go, like, and if you call them out on it, they go, I'm not prejudiced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they get all mad and offended when you point it out. They're like, what? No.
Yeah,
no.
That's what you're saying.
I just hate everybody
really
that lives on that side of town. Well, Jesus Christ. You know, like, I'm just making stuff up. Like, but I'm saying, like, it's like, you know, like, you know, you have to preface stuff before you say it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of a prejudice thing.
Yeah.
Like, when you go, hey, I'm not prejudiced, but, and then you start telling a story, it's like, I think you kind of are.
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks he's prejudiced. Is what I'm saying.
But
he does. I don't think he thinks he does.
People.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think he thinks he does. Mm-hmm. But, and again, this argument I can have with other people in the limelight. You might say you're not prejudiced, but when people who are white supremacists agree with you, there's a problem.
Oh yeah.
There's a problem, and he didn't see himself as that. But then when the Nazi says, "Hey, we're the same," and then he's thinking in his head like, "Oh my God, maybe I kind of am." But wait a minute, hold on. Here's the thing. At that point, he realizes he actually has to murder somebody now, because he's stuck in that basement with the Nazi, and the Nazi's got him, like, in a compromising position, and he realizes, I'm going to have to now actually murder somebody.
You know,
like, at this point, he's just been angry.
I don't know how I want to say it, but Pulp Fiction.
Sure. Yeah, oh, it was.
Well, yeah, it's
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, because he was saying, he was right behind him, and he said, give it to me harder, give it to me more. He's talking about he's talking about the handcuff.
White supremacist, all the whole thing, and I'm like,
100%.
Oh my God, it's like Pulp Fiction flashback.
Some latent homosexuality in there that he doesn't want to admit to kind of situation.
Well, yeah, that's why he's so anti-gay.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't, exactly. He didn't want to
I wasn't even thinking of that.
Yep. I was thinking that.
But what's interesting is that I think, up to and he says it, that he calls his wife after he murders the Nazi. He calls his wife, and he's now stalking her and harassing her 100% and saying even more and more, like, not terrible things, but just unhinged things to his wife. I'm coming to the house and you can't stop me, and so forth. And he says, I'm at the point of no return. Right. He says it on the phone. I'm at the point of no return. Up to this point, he's just had a terrible day, and his temper has gotten in the way, and his weird upbringing. We know he's got mommy issues. We know he's got daddy issues from what we learn about his mother. So he's got some issues going into the day, and this is to him, it's all kind of like, it's all escalated.
Yeah, it's building up.
But now now that he's killed the dude, now it's at the point of no return. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. And we haven't even talked about Robert Duvall yet. Michael Douglas takes no ownership for any of his decisions. Mm-hmm. He is willing to blame everybody else. Oh, it's them. They did it. The construction people are making my life miserable. Mm-hmm. The immigrants are making my life miserable. And the life miserable of people that can't get a job. Blah, 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 blah. He's always blaming them. But when he finally has to take ownership for something, or his wife. You know, it's your fault that I can't come see my daughter. It's your fault. Not my fault. It's your fault. You won't let me come see her. But once he actually murders somebody, it flips the switch and says he now has to take ownership for something, and he still won't. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Robert Duvall, who is this old, we haven't talked about him yet. He's a cop. He's literally, he's Murtaugh. It's his last day. Hours, right?
I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, and he is, through this, this poor bastard is emasculated through the entire movie. Mm-hmm. All the young guys, he's washed up and not a good cop anymore. He's riding a desk.
Oh my God.
And his wife, but his wife's an interesting situation. His boss, the police sergeant, the captain, basically undresses in front of him. You know what I mean? And grabs his manhood and says, "You're not a man. Look at me." After he hits a punching bag and he gets dressed and undressed in front of him. Not totally, but the point is, like, I'm a man and you're not. Like, I'm standing up and you're sitting down, and I'm holding my junk and you're sitting there like an old guy. And like, to me, it was completely emasculating, and everybody's telling how shitty he is, and he just takes it, mm-hmm. right? And the reason he's retiring is because and they don't come out and say it, is his wife is fragile.
Yeah.
And they had a baby girl and she died by SIDS for no reason, right? And
when she was older,
So she died, and then because he's a cop, and because she had someone taken from her suddenly for no reason, she now thinks that he's just going to be murdered suddenly for no reason. Keep in mind, the movie doesn't come out and tell that, mm-hmm. doesn't say that to us, but we figure it out as it goes through. And here's Robert Duvall blaming no one. He is owning what's happening in his life. His wife is obviously mentally ill. Mm-hmm. He's lost a daughter. He's riding the desk, even though he doesn't want to ride the desk. But he's not blaming anybody. He's mm-hmm. taking ownership for everything that's happened in his life. And when people start to bring up his wife, he's like, "Don't you bring up my wife. You don't know anything about what's going on." Mm-hmm. When people give him a hard time about his police work, he doesn't say anything. "Well, you know what? I'm doing this. I'm riding a desk. I want to be out on the street, but my wife made me do this." Blah, blah, blah. He never says that. Mm-hmm. Even though it's always kind of behind his eyes, he never says it. Robert Duvall takes ownership. He does not blame the world. Mm-hmm. He says, "Here's the problem, and I'm going to deal with it, and I don't need to broadcast to everybody how bad my life is." Whereas Michael Douglas blames everybody else but him, mm-hmm. and is willing to tell everybody, Whammy Burger, construction people, the convenience store person, how bad everything is. He never takes ownership until he kills the guy. And then, I can't blame anybody but me on that one. And that's when he starts to really lose his mind.
Well, you know what I didn't notice when I was watching it? Well, what I noticed this time when I was watching it, but I didn't notice it at all ever before. You know how he's running away and he runs, like, I don't know, like through somebody else's yard?
Yep.
And there's the guy thinks he's security because mm-hmm. he's having a barbecue with his wife and his kids.
Yep.
And he scares the crap out of them, the kids, and even has a little girl in his arms, and he's so insane that he doesn't realize what he's doing to these people and how much he's scaring these kids and mm-hmm. the family thinks that they're going to get killed and whatever, until, you know, the guy was like, "Just take me." And he was like, "You think I'm going to hurt your family? Mm-hmm. I have a family." You know what I mean? Like, but the thing is when the one part that he said, it's my little girl's birthday. I'm going to go home and whatever. And I'm going to be with my wife and my daughter, and everything's going to be back to the way it was. And then mm-hmm. we're going to go to sleep, and it's yep. going to be nice and dark.
Yep.
You know, and he said that, I was like, oh my mm-hmm. God. Like, it totally did stand at that point. Yeah. Like, he was going to kill her. But I never, ever picked that up before. And mm-hmm. I was still kind of thinking, like, I must be wrong. Do you know what I mean? And
no, he's not.
Later on at the very end, when the cop was like saying, "Yeah, you're going to kill her. You're going to kill him."
He's on a suicide mission.
It never occurred to me that, like, ever yeah. when I watched it before.
He's on a suicide mission. He's either going to waste his family and himself, or just himself. The end, because he's at the point of no return.
Yeah.
He cannot accept the fact that he can't blame anybody now, mm-hmm. except himself, and that's more than he can fathom. Mm-hmm. That's more than he can fathom. Also, I'd like to note that again, this whole theme of not taking ownership of your decisions before, again. Geographically, this movie takes you on a trip. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going from the highway, the bad end of town, quote unquote, the bad end of town, inner city. Again, not that inner city is bad, just saying. No, I'm just, because, you know, whatever. Every city has its areas, right? So, but whatever. I mean, from the depth of the city where everything's foggy and gross, mm-hmm. to the golf course. as right, he's so going
not affluent, right?
Yes, like, not, yeah. Let's just say it that way. Not affluent. Again, I'm not casting any aspersions.
Yeah, no, I get you.
I love this city. Don't get me wrong. I love being in the city, but so my point is that up to the neo-Nazi scene, he's blaming everybody else, mostly people in the city, as to why his life is bad. Like, I can't believe that the immigrants are making my life more difficult. They're trying to stab me as I'm just trying to go home. They're trying to take advantage of me in the convenience store. They're trying to do this, this, and that. And it's almost like he's blaming them for where he is now. And then once he gets into the rich side of town and he sees the plastic surgeons living in a mansion, mm-hmm. he says, oh, so they have, why can't I have this?
Yeah.
So which one is it? Which one do you not like? You know what I mean? It's
like
almost like he can't, he's never willing to accept where he is. Mm-hmm. He can't accept that other people are trying to be affluent and make the best of the American dream. He doesn't like it when people are trying to make the best of the American dream. Again, the guy with the bank, I'm not economically viable. Mm-hmm. He's trying to make the best of the American dream and failing. And when he gets to an area where they are making the best of the American dream, he doesn't like that either. So what's your fucking problem? Do you like anything? He doesn't. You know why? Because he's obviously broken. He's a broken person for whatever reason.
Of course, I'm the most calm. I'm the most polite nuts.
No,
but you know what? It's funny. In movies, I become like I watch a movie and I'm a lot less like I would be in normal life as far as my viewing. Mm-hmm. Like I'll watch a movie, see a guy who's an asshole throughout, and I know it's a movie that's an action packed movie or whatever. And I'll go, can't wait till that guy fucking dies. Now, that is not the way I am in life, but when I'm watching a movie, I become insensitive about, certain characters, because I don't have any attachment, and it's fiction, and I know that.
Yeah. That's why I loved it when the guy fell down the stairs. I was like, get him.
Which one? Which scene?
When the guy fell down the stairs, when he took the guy was going to beat him up with a bat or whatever, and he grabbed the guy's bat and whacked him, and he rolled all the way down the stairs.
Oh, right.
And you're like, yeah.
Well, it's like me, I'm going... Yeah, I don't care about that bastard on the golf course. Mm-hmm. I don't care if he's having a heart attack. Die. When that guy on the golf course was like, get off of my fucking course. And it's like, and then it's like, I don't know. It's like I become a prick. Like when I'm watching a movie, I go, fuck that guy. But it's like, I'm not insensitive.
Again, another territory argument. You're on my territory, mm-hmm. right? Golf course to... other scene, right? It still comes down to, no matter what, we're all about our territory.
Yeah.
It's us and our end, and look at them over there, and it doesn't matter. It's all about territory.
Right. Yeah.
So what's he trying to tell us in this movie? You know what I mean? Like, everybody's got their little territory, and Michael Douglas comes in and just kind of upends the entire thing.
Well, maybe. Maybe he's trying to say that nobody in this is 100% right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not all Michael Douglas being evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's everybody's got their problems. They shouldn't be doing as much as they're doing. Mm-hmm. He also shouldn't be taking it to this level.
Of course.
He doesn't need to make a point with a freaking rocket launcher.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, you know what I mean? Like, there's a comfortable middle there maybe you don't have to,
mm-hmm.
You don't go as far as he does, but maybe you don't have to be as bad as you are on the other side. Like, the guy in the golf course saying, get the fuck off.
Yeah.
I think it was also funny how the kid was teaching him how to do it.
That was great. That's adorable.
It's weird because, guys, we're talking about Joel Schumacher. Again, he put nipples on the bat suit. He put, the Bane's henchman. And he had the bat card. Don't leave home without it. And we had him, Arnold Schwarzenegger saying, freeze. Like, this is the guy that made this, and this is what I'm talking about. There are two interrogation scenes in this movie.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, how is this the same dude? So, and that's great. I'm glad that you can diversify and do silly shit and didn't do this. And again, not that this movie is not flawed, because it is, but there's two interrogation scenes in this movie. One, Michael Douglas with a rocket launcher at the construction site, talking to the flag guy who's just sitting there, whose only job is to say, don't step in the hole.
Yes.
That's his only job. He doesn't need to know what else is going on in the construction thing. And here's Michael Douglas saying, you tell me that nothing's going on here. He's like, I don't know if nothing's going on. My only job is to stand here with a flag and say, don't step here. I don't know what they're doing. And he's like, no, he's threatening him. And say, you tell me that there's nothing wrong with the road. And he says, okay, there's nothing wrong with the road. Because you know what? When you interrogate somebody, they're going to tell you the thing you want to hear.
And then
especially with a gun.
Especially with a gun. You're just going
to
say, fine.
Hold the gun to my head. I'll be like, yes, I am the color blue.
Right.
Yes.
And you know what
so
I mean?
Like, Michael,
it's not true, but I'll tell you that.
He has zero personal skills and absolutely does not know. So here comes again the armed American with a bag full of guns telling everybody why he's pissed off. And the thing is, it's all about communication, right? He's screaming at a guy saying, tell me this or I'll shoot you in the head. Of course, you're going to get the answer that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Whereas we finally get Robert Duvall finally allowed to be a detective, get out from behind the desk, goes to see the mother once he figures out that it's Bill Foster and where she lives, goes to see the mother, which is a really odd scene. He has his partner with him, the young woman, I forget her name, and she starts with, hi, we're the police, we have some questions, and blah, blah, blah. And Robert Duvall realizes that interrogating this woman that way is not going to work. Mm-hmm. So he kind of de-escalates and says, hey, what about these sculptures?
Hmm.
And gets her to kind of talk about the sculptures first. Like, let's not rush this. Hmm. We can probably get more information out of her if we let her know that she can trust us. And eventually gets into Bill Foster's room. These are the two people, right? He's not going to blame, look, lady, you're going to tell me where your son is, whether you like it or not, because that's blaming her. We're just here to get some information. So he figures out how to deal with her. Whereas Michael Douglas just beats them over the head until he gets the answer that he wants.
Right. And
that probably was his marriage. Yeah. Yeah, he never laid a finger on her, but he's not going to let her go. He's not going to let her say anything until he gets the answer that he wants.
Yeah.
Which is abuse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%.
Well, yeah. And they're showing you two sides of mental illnesses, like, and the way to handle them. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like one guy, you know, is kind of isolated and, you know, like taking everything to the extreme. And then you could have Robert Duvall be someone who doesn't care.
Yep.
Like, meaning of his own wife. Like okay, well, she's nuts now. I can't stay with her mm-hmm. and leave.
Yep.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, not be with her. No, instead, he's on the phone going, London Bridge is falling.
I thought that was so
down.
Sweet.
Right, right. But I'm saying, like, you know, that's showing you how much he actually cares. Right. So, like, mm-hmm. not but, like, that, you know, helps my point of he is still.
She's having a panic attack, you know.
And mm-hmm. he's not allowing what happened to them to, like, how many people, like, even in movies, you hear they lost their child. They can't stay together because they grieve differently. Well, he is still in it for the long haul, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other note, though, with the guy, you know, with the interrogation, it's so typical that it's funny how tough we can be or pretend to be until somebody pulls out the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so the guy sitting there guarding the hole is an absolute douche.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Until the gun comes out. So, like, what I'm saying is, it's probably a good lesson for a lot of people on how to not be in everyday life. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, don't be a dick. And then maybe somebody won't pull a gun on you. Like, maybe. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not guaranteeing it, but at least maybe lessen your chances of having
again,
a gun.
I'm fighting with Michael Douglas a little bit.
No, not me.
Get through the movie until the end, though, in a way. Because
I'm not siding with him. I'm just saying, like, don't be a dick. Like,
right.
Because the guy was a douche, Mm-hmm. Until the rocket launcher came out. He was like, right. oh, hold on. No. Like, I swear, yeah. I don't know. I was like, could you have said, I really don't know. They pay me to sit here and make sure people.
Well, everybody's kind of being a jerk. I mean, even at the freaking burger place, it's like, yep. They're like, no, sorry, we stopped serving breakfast.
Right.
I mean, it was, okay, you know what? Look what time it is. It's like, it was like 4 past or something. It's like, don't tell me you don't have something sitting right there. Like, and they did. They literally, when he finally said, they had something sitting right there. All mm-hmm. she did was grab a box. It was right there, but they wouldn't give it to him.
But also, let's look at Joel Schumacher's LA universe. Everyone is an asshole. Everybody, right? And we are sent two characters to deal with that universe. One of them is Bill Foster, and one of them is Prendergast, the Robert Duvall character, right? And both of them handle it differently. Michael Douglas deals with the traffic jam by getting the fuck out of here. And then runs out of his car, which everybody wants to do. Whereas Robert Duvall tries to be helpful, right? He said, let me help you get this car out of the way. He tries to be helpful. And is again treated like he's an asshole. Even when he says he's a cop to the cop.
I know.
The cop is still not nice to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Don't touch my bike.
But Robert Duvall doesn't curse him out. He just says, okay, well, these people are all just having a day.
That's because he's a good guy. Then there's a difference.
Right. Yeah. Just because everyone else is being that doesn't mean you need to be that too. Yeah. Even though it's really hard sometimes and everybody has their limit, you know.
That's why
you side with Mike at first. You side with Bill Foster at first. And then by the end, like, no, he's actually, you know, kind of unhinged. Like, he's not okay.
But you know what I was going to say? Because of this movie and the whole Whammy Burger situation of the sorry. We're not serving breakfast. It's 4 past, even though they're sitting right there. But I think I also thought it was kind of funny, like immediately right after him, he's seen everybody's burgers. He's like, you know what? I changed my mind after all that. It's like
the woman vomiting. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh my, that was so funny.
Who is credited as vomiting woman?
He goes, "How's your burger?" Blah. Okay.
Yeah.
Might have a complaint here.
So after this movie, McDonald's basically changed their rules to serve breakfast any time of day.
We don't want Bill Foster coming in.
Isn't that funny?
But also, and that's a funny scene. However, again, credit to Joel Schumacher for not shoving it down our throat.
Yeah.
He dealt with that scene with, oh, you know what? I don't want breakfast anymore. He realized he's gone a little too far. Mm-hmm. I changed my mind. I'll have lunch. Yeah. And that's how he would have dealt with his daughter.
He's like those burgers were good.
Yeah, like, oh, she's crying. Oh, get on the horse. Get on the goddamn rocking horse. And like, okay, no, it's okay. Birthday party. Like, he doesn't know at all. And it's probably because of his upbringing. And again, we don't see why. All we see is a fleeting glimpse of Navy memorabilia, which says that his dad was in the Navy, which then you go to, well, maybe he was really strict, or maybe he didn't allow people to emote, or maybe whatever. And everything in his room is really neat.
Yes, his
and
room.
And squared away. Yes. So everything's got to be perfect or he loses his mind. And his mother, who is obviously a little mentally ill as well, you know, he doesn't come out and tell us the entire family backstory.
Yeah.
But we can figure it out with little bits of information, which I appreciate. I don't need a flashback of young Bill Foster. Just give me this information. And he did it. And I don't know. It was really good.
I missed the thing about the father, though. I mean, what is
when they go in the house, there's a little there's a little memorial. There's like a Navy citation and a flag, and there's a black and white picture of a man in a Navy in a Navy outfit. So I'm assuming it's his dad, and dad wasn't in the house, and we assume he passed away.
Yeah.
But we don't know why.
So what you're saying is you're just because of that, you just think because it's really strict, and then also the way the room is set up. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying Navy people are bad, obviously. I'm saying that maybe in a military household that would be a little stricter than normal, particularly if mom is already a little mentally ill, which she is because she seems it. Mm-hmm. Or we don't know why. But anyway, the ending, I think, is interesting because we finally get, you know, it's like the Batman finally gets to meet Joker one-on-one. Mm-hmm. They've been chasing each other the whole movie. And I was trying to wonder, I talked to my wife, and I don't know if I have enough to support the thesis, but are Bill Foster and Prendergast shadows of each other? The same guy, but coming from a different angle? I don't have much to support that. But the end of the movie, we know he loses the gun.
Yeah.
But he says he has a gun. So is this Michael Douglas saying, is this his suicide attempt?
Yeah, I think he knows it's the end of the road from them for him. Yeah, and it anyway, and he can't
and
get
Melanie,
away. There's nowhere.
It is legit physically the end of the road. It's the end of a pier. There is no way out.
Why the hell did she run there anyway? That I thought that was so stupid because now you're trapped. Like, she runs.
But why does the girl run upstairs instead of out the front door?
But she runs to this crowded city of all these places that she could have hid and also have gotten away. Mm-hmm. She runs to a pier. There's nowhere else you can go. Once he runs down that pier, where are you going to go? Take your daughter and throw her in the ocean? I mean, that, to me, it was just a dumb place.
You got nowhere. You know, it's a panicky moment. You're hoping that there's a lot of people to cover you. Mm-hmm. It's not the it's flawed. It's a flawed moment.
She's already in the city. She could have hid behind the buildings over there. He saw her go over there and knew where she was. Oh, I figured I know where she was. You know,
because we want the final moment where Michael Douglas goes over the edge and sinks, and that's his final
with a
repose.
Toy gun. He didn't even have a real gun anymore.
Yeah, with the water gun.
You don't have time to like wonder. Yeah. At that point, you know, like
I think the ending is. I think for the most part. It's a really a super ending, and like I said, we finally get the cat and mouse is at the end, and we get to actually see Robert Duvall is a good detective. Mm-hmm. He gets to prove himself, and he gets to show that, I was behind the desk, but even in my old age and the big gut, I can make my way across Venice, California and figure out where this person's going to be down to the square yard.
Also, he was right about him. Nobody believed that he was right about him. He was putting all the clues together. Like, excuse me, did you say that guy had a white shirt on a tie? You know what I mean? Like, and everybody was like, what are you talking about?
It's just something about it stunk from the beginning, and it finally got to that end point.
Where Michael Douglas wanted to go that way, obviously. He wanted to be shot and killed and die that way, or he wouldn't have pulled out the toy gun when he didn't have any, you know what I mean? Like,
I personally felt no redemption that he decided not to retire. I don't think that mattered.
No, I think...
I don't think it mattered. I think that was a little too Hollywood ending. Like, oh, he's a detective and he's finally gonna... His whole life, he's always sacrificed everything and it was never about him. It was always about everybody else. And now finally, he said, you know what? I'm gonna do something for me. I'm gonna stay being a detective because I'm good at it and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know that I felt any better. No. I would have been fine if he said that was it. I'm gonna go retire now.
I did think about his wife, though. Now, what's she gonna do?
Yeah.
She's gonna have a fit.
Like, I thought that was unnecessary. It didn't take away from the end, but I would have been fine either way.
At least he said, because we didn't mention. You know how his boss, had said he was treating him like shit. You know, like changing in front of him. Or also, he says, "I never liked you. You don't even swear." Right, so he chooses his moment to swear while he's about to be interviewed on TV. And he goes, "Come on over, man." And he's like, "And I don't know the guy's name, so I'm just gonna say Chief." Fuck you, Chief. Fuck you very much. Yeah. And he walks away. That's a great moment.
Yeah,
because it's like, I picked my moment to swear on television.
So
I also don't like that. Like, did she see everything happen or did she?
No, I think they sheltered her enough.
Well, they ran away.
They ran away.
Said that, go leave her. Yeah. Because I'm like, she's gonna have nightmares for the rest of her life.
Yeah,
right. She was like, Daddy, you know, like.
Yeah, well, she doesn't know.
And look, and they say just wait till tomorrow. Let her have her birthday.
Right. She didn't know. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, let her have her birthday and whatnot. And,
and that's crazy. Imagine the mom having to deal with that. Like after everything that just happened, she goes home and there's a bunch of people at her door. Like, hey, we're here for the party, and she's like, oh my god, come on in.
I don't know, Melanie. If you rolled up to a birthday party and there was a lot of police cruisers, would you go into that party?
That was so weird.
Well, I'm just saying, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That final last 2 minutes is kind of little too Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, the other girl's getting pulled away in like a stretcher, and there's guests showing up with birthday.
There's an ambulance right out front. Ooh, pony rides for everybody.
All right.
It's time for TMI with Melanie.
Listen to this. I am in the bathroom right before the movie starts.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in the stall, and there's no toilet paper.
Yeah. Mine are at home in a display case above my bed.
Yeah. TMI. TMI, my friends.
TMI? Too much information. Say don't go there, but that's lame.
Now, here's Melanie with your timeless movie info.
All right, Melanie. Don't fall.
I knew you were going to say song. I was waiting for you to say something. All right. The budget was $25 million and it grossed $96 million. Falling Down was being filmed in various locations in California when the 1992 Los Angeles riots began, and the riots were sufficiently disruptive during filming the whole time.
I would think.
They had to keep changing their location and stuff. Iron Maiden's song Man on the Edge is based on this movie. The Foo Fighters' music video for their song Walk is completely inspired by and mimics the whole movie. To promote the release of the Baby Got Back, Sir Mix-a-Lot Studio sent a giant 20x15 inflatable butt around the country in April of 92, and the same month this film began filming around L.A. The inflatable butt makes a cameo during the phone booth scene. Mm-hmm. Did you guys see that? Because I don't know.
Wendy was like, hey, look at that giant butt.
Yeah.
And I go, it says Sir Mix-a-Lot.
That's funny. And the Simpsons, I wrote this for you, Jay. In a Simpsons episode entitled Homer's Enemy, 1997, the animators said that they designed the character of Frank Grimes to look like Michael Douglas in this
Grimy.
Film. The idea was both men were fed up and impatient with society.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Douglas considers this his favorite performance of all movies that he has been in. In fact, nobody wanted to make this movie at first, but he loved it so much. Detective Brian Stephen Park says that he cannot translate. This is just so stupid. I don't know why they do this in movies. Okay, so he says, I cannot translate for Mr. Lee because he is Japanese and Mr. Lee is Korean. Remember, he was like, in case you haven't noticed, I am Japanese and he is Korean. But I don't know why they do this. So really, Steve Park was the detective that said that. And Mr. Lee, his name is Michael Paul Chan. Okay, so in real life, Mr. Lee is actually Korean and Chan is Chinese. Why couldn't they just let them play their own selves?
Oh, really?
Weird.
That's weird.
I don't know why they do
why?
That.
Well, let's go back to the Goonies. The kid who is an American-born Vietnamese kid was forced to put on a Chinese accent.
Yeah.
And play a Chinese kid.
Yeah.
So weird.
You know what I mean? It's like you're Vietnamese, yet you speak with an American accent.
Yeah.
Right? Because you were born here, but yet you must do a fake Chinese accent to play this Chinese kid.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. They could have just played themselves. Michael Douglas planned to take a break from acting as he had just done two films back to back and desired to spend some time with his family. Douglas agreed to read the script after Schumacher's urging. He declared it one of the best that he has ever read, taking the role immediately. The presence of such a popular actor as the lead allowed the film to get a much higher budget. Douglas, believing that the film was very important, agreed to take a much lower salary so that the film could also have more money to be made. The Korean-American Coalition protested the film for its treatment of minorities, as well as a South Korean grocer. Because of this, the boycott threats that followed this movie was banned in South Korea. The film is also criticized as racist due to its portrayal of minorities and was also condemned as anti-white propaganda by conservatives. The scene where William D. Fens, fostered by
I'm just laughing like, hey, this is against, all the others. Wait, no, this is against white people. It's like, how about you shut the fuck
up? Which one is it? Yeah. Which one is it, guys?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The scene where William defends Foster buys a snow globe was filmed next door to the Cobra Kai and the Karate Kid 1994.
Of course you brought that up. Of course you
did. Nice.
Of course.
Did you read that before?
No.
No, he's just saying, here's Frank Grimes, by the way.
Yep.
Oh my God, he looks just like him.
Yep. And it's Frank Grimes, or Grimy, as he liked to be called.
How about
another thing that I read that I didn't write down because I was like, whatever. But when he changes from his suit into like that more military looking outfit, and it was kind of like him trying to turn the point of trying to give up his old life.
Yes.
Especially when he hands the suitcase finally to that other guy and he keeps the bag of guns. He's now saying, okay, this part of his life is over. This is who I am now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's absolutely a line in the sand of before and after. And right in the middle is where he loses his mind.
Yeah, and I kind of thought it was funny too, because the guy's like, just give me the briefcase. I can sell that for a lot of money, you know. Yeah. And then he opens it up, and then he was like, damn it. And he was like freaking, he's saying he's starving and that he hasn't eaten anything and he's eating right now. And then he throws the apple down the street. I'm like, well, he's not that hungry. Like, he threw away the apple and he's all mad that the briefcase is empty, but he literally just said, just give me the briefcase because I can sell it.
Also, so
he doesn't really want the briefcase and he doesn't want the food and he's already eating. I just thought it was kind of funny.
And also, you know, there's a very good chance that his mother packed his lunch for him.
Yes.
100%. Because it's an apple and it's a sandwich wrapped in plastic wrap.
Yeah. 100%.
So you could make, doesn't have to be, doesn't have to tell us that, but you could, after you met mom and where he lives, you're like, mom probably made his lunch.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
Yeah.
That's definitely weird. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Nothing else to do.
Well, but still, it's weird.
Yeah.
You've been to space? You've never been?
You've never been? Yeah.
It's time now for Final Judgment. Are you ready to rubber stamp this bitch? Here's the Final Judgment.
All right. Well, a lot of people received Final Judgment in this film.
That's true.
And hopefully I'll never meet somebody like... Bill Foster.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
You know.
Because you'll be like, whoa, what's the problem? What's wrong? That's us all day.
Knowing us, we would be one of the ones that would get blown away or something because we can piss them off somehow for some reason.
Well, I certainly would not act like the guy next to the hole. Hey, fuck you. Sorry. Hey.
Yeah.
All right. Let's, I don't know. Chris, you want to go?
Sure. So does it hold up? I think it holds up in that it is a... interesting piece on a lot of things, on the American way of life, on relationships with other cultures, on capitalism, on communication, on mental illness, on a lot of things. And I think that what could be dangerous about the movie is people that watch it and go just
cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool. Oh, Michael Douglas, that's rad. Like
let's do that.
Everybody's always wanted to say that, so we just should. And I think what they're getting at here is that, Michael Douglas, just because you can say it, doesn't mean you should say it. So that's not how society actually works. Mm-hmm. And you have to really kind of pick and choose the things that you want to say at what time. So, I'd say it holds up. I understand where people could come from and maybe say that it's a little... you know, a little iffy. I could see why people would say that would have an issue like the Korean shopkeeper.
Yeah, 100%.
And all the gangland stuff.
Stereotype.
And I get it, but that's kind of the treatise of the film.
Yeah.
Is that we're supposed to look at it that way and take a harsh look at what this stuff looks like. So, I don't know. I think it holds up, but I don't think it holds up for young people. I think you have to be a mature person to watch this. And to get everything out of it, because not that I'm a racist or anything or that, but when all I can say is when I was younger when I saw it, 1920, and all I remember is Michael Douglas's scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any of the other context.
Yeah, so but that could be
dangerous. All I'm saying is that could be dangerous in the wrong hands.
Mm. Right? No, I get it. What I'm saying is though, he is so powerful in this movie as far as his acting.
Yeah.
He is just so present.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can't take your eyes off.
Nope.
You know. Yeah. So I think that there's a reason you're forgetting a lot of different pieces.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
You know. Because I think
he's kind of funny though when you were watching it. Like that. I like the burger scene. I think that's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like the burger scene's probably the funniest part.
I can see the humor.
He didn't hurt anybody in it, you know what I mean? And he wasn't prejudiced in that part at all. It was just wicked funny because it's somebody losing it going, excuse me.
And
what do you mean you're not serving breakfast anymore? It's 4 minutes past. Just
Melanie, a bit of dark humor is when we see the guy having the heart attack on the golf course and we see that that his pills are in the golf cart that is just as he turns around going into a water trap.
Yeah.
I mean, that's dark comedy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's and in any other movie, that's dark comedy, but not in this movie. Mm-hmm. But it is played for laughs.
Yeah.
And it makes us laugh at a horrible moment.
Well, but like, you know, I mean, we don't like this guy. Like I said, when I'm watching a movie, like I said, I'm not that sensitive. You know, I am, but it depends on.
Yeah.
I'm quick to judge because it's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm okay with going, fuck that guy. I hope he's, he redeemed himself. All right, I like him now. I do take that journey. But I allow myself to, is why. You know, like I said, I wouldn't do that in real life. So I'll go. I think it holds up, you know, because it still grabs you. I think it also represents what could be today still.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't changed much.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in some place, in some ways, yes, great. And then you know, in other areas, no, horrible. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of masks that are off now. It's scary, mm-hmm. you know? Where, like, the guy in the shop, that should be controversial
mm-hmm.
because it is controversial.
Yeah.
The guy in the Army-Navy store.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot more people that are mm-hmm. comfortable today
mm-hmm.
being that way. Where mm-hmm. in 1993, there was probably, like, you know, like, I don't know, like, we were starting to try to become more progressive, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, so the moviegoer would be shocked.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would say, but I don't know, it just makes me worried, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. as far as, like, how well this holds up. But so you're right about, like, you know, make sure the right people watch it, not just everybody, you know, like, mm-hmm. You don't want anybody being influenced by such a movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, or like getting the wrong message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you were saying, what's the message?
Yeah.
At the time? Right. So mm-hmm. you're saying at 47, am I right?
49.
Oh, 49.
Yeah.
My bad. Hey, okay. Look, I undershot.
All right. Super. Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
The de-aging machine.
You got two more years to go.
Woo!
I'm 50, so he's got one more year. And I was like,
right. No, I meant like two more years to get to the age I sold him.
Right,
okay. You know, to what he really is. But anyways, no, it does hold up. It's I think everybody you know, and most people could watch this and get what we got.
Sure.
Like I said.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's frightening to know how much it holds up because of, like, today's society.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Like, I think you almost have to watch it twice because, like I said, like, when I was younger, I just remembered the parts that Chris remembered, and I thought they were funny because, like I said, all I can remember is, like, being stuck in traffic, wanting to get out and going, just admit you're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? What's taking so long? Just get it over with already. So stuff like that is just funny, and the whole, like, again, when you're... The whole breakfast ends at exactly 11 o'clock, but you know you got some stuff sitting there right behind you, and it's just a few minutes later, and you're not willing to stick it in a bag and sell it to somebody. I mean, or the person who's not willing to give change for change, like, just to be a mm-hmm. jerk, you know what I mean? Like, when the guy's, like, desperate, he has no car, he has no transportation, it's hot as hell, all he wants is change for a payphone, and then he can't even get a drink and get change. So at the beginning, you're kind of like, okay, everyone's been in one of these positions before that you can relate, so I think it's relatable in some ways. And racism is totally still, like you said, it holds up, which is sad and relatable. And so I definitely think it holds up 100%. I think he had to get worse and worse throughout the movie so that mm-hmm. you were understanding just how horrible he really is and just how much of a person that's very dangerous, I guess I should say. He's very dangerous to people around him. And you know, people like that are still around this day. So there's nothing really about it that doesn't hold up because it's all still happening. And you know, but I think it's a good movie. I think if you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth seeing. And yeah, definitely think it holds up. I was glad to watch it again. I enjoyed watching it.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, that's our show, everybody. And normally this is where I thank the guest, but there is no guest. So, no, I'm saying
we
like,
got this.
It's about like I flow right into like the, you know, let me know where you where we find you. But no, it's just us three, and it was fun to do. And listen, please like this video and subscribe to our channel. And I'd like to thank Steve Lavoie for his vocal imaging and Draco and the Malfoys for our theme music. And hey, until next time, on the behalf of Melanie and Chris, I'd like to say thank you for listening. And next time, until next time, movies may not age like fine wine. Apparently, I've been drinking too many of them.
Yeah.
Easy, but we drink them anyway.